We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Yesterday, Cliff Sora shared a top 10 list of hot fusion restaurants, a vegan gluten-free mashup recipe, and a podcast featuring organic food trends. Oh, TMI, too much internet information. That's oversharing. Cliff, Geico has something worth sharing with your friends. Like how on geico.com you could save hundreds on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim. Gluten-free info that's easy to swallow. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use the promo code RotoWire when you deposit for a free contest entry today. It is Tuesday, November 17th, 2015. I'm Jake Litarski, here alongside Eric Katuri. If you are out there on Twitter, you can follow Eric at ETCAT30. You can follow myself, Jake, at JakeSki52. Now, Eric, I had one of the better weeks of the year, went 4-1 and made a pretty nice haul in daily. How about you? Were you pretty successful this week?
Yeah, in season-long formats, went 4-0, but when it came to daily, just had some technical issues when I usually put in my lineups in the last 15 or 20 minutes before noon, and didn't actually get any in this week, personally.
Yeah, you're kind of like me. We both work here on Sunday mornings, kind of getting the NFL content ready to go here with a big team, a crew, and I always like to get it. Most of my daily lineups, I'd say 90% of them are set within the last 20 minutes before kickoff.
Yeah, exactly.
I like to take in all the injury information as possible, wait for any late reports, and see what happens there. And yeah, it's stressful. It's a little bit of work, but it's I'd say it's well worth it as far as success-wise goes.
Yeah, indeed. I agree with that for sure.
You're not scrambling to check lineups that you made a couple days ago just to make sure there's no injuries or anything unexpected like that.
Unlike Doria.
I don't know. He seems to do all right in daily, though. I don't know.
He sets his lineups, you know, well in advance, and then, oh, did I set a lineup again?
Oh, I better go check that. Yeah, all right.
Do I have injuries?
Yeah.
He's the man, though, when it comes to daily advice around the office, especially pre-kickoff. We got a pretty good crew here. Before we get going, this podcast is available on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to leave us a nice review if you happen to be listening on those platforms. Well, Eric, we're going to get going today with the Monday Night Football recap. We had a pretty exciting contest here. Texans won 10-6 here. I pretty much picked a good Monday to take off to Milwaukee to go see a college basketball game. Am I right?
Yeah, it was a pretty boring game. Defense dominated this. There wasn't even a touchdown scored until the fourth quarter, 40 seconds into the fourth quarter. That was DeAndre Hopkins catching a 22-yard pass from T.J. Yates. And Yates was in the game because Brian Hoyer actually suffered a concussion, which he'll be dealing with this week. So that's just something to keep in mind, I guess, when it comes to QB situations. It's a fringe one, but one that we're going to keep an eye on all week.
Yeah, we'll touch on Yates a little bit when we get to the quarterback portion there. In relief of Hoyer, Yates was 5-11 for 69 yards and that touchdown to DeAndre Hopkins. There. Rest of the Texans side, the winning side, we'll look at the backs. Jonathan Grimes, 6 carries for 33 yards. Alfred Blue had a really disappointing day, 12 carries for 22 yards, a long of 5. I needed Alfred Blue to outscore Marvin Jones by a point and a half in a half-point PPR format. That would have helped me propel me to 5-0. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. Can you count on Alfred Blue in any formats anymore? I know he had a pretty tough matchup here, but he's just really not been producing in the wake of Arian Foster's injury.
Yeah, I don't think any back is really that special in this backfield at the moment without Arian Foster not there. So I'm just avoiding the situation entirely unless the matchup would be incredibly enticing and say Daly.
Yeah, there's a couple situations where if you do hit a terrible run defense, then maybe Alfred Blue and performances like this will help bring his price down on DraftKings. So quite possible.
So the entire team, Houston, accounted for 25 carries, 82 yards, which is good for 3.3 yards per carry. That's just, you can't have an offense be sustainable under that.
Yeah, very reflective of Alfred Blue's performance on the year. He's averaging 3.4 a carry and has just one run of over 20 yards. So
they're kind of the inverse of St. Louis. They have one dynamic receiver and nothing else, whereas St. Louis has Gurley and little else outside of that.
Yeah, right on. And DeAndre Hopkins, you mentioned that he did score the touchdown to salvage the fantasy day, but still not a huge performance, not really propelling anyone to a millionaire maker on Monday night there. Hopkins with 5 catches for 57 yards on 11 targets. Not a whole lot else of note in this passing attack. Nate Washington, 2 catches, 32 yards. Cecil Shorts, 3 catches, 16 yards. Not a whole lot to see there outside of Hopkins. What about on the Bengals side? I thought Andy Dalton was supposed to be an MVP candidate here. He kind of stunk it up a little bit. 22 for 38, 197 yards, no touchdowns, one interception, was sacked 3 times. What's the deal with the redheaded BB gun here?
Yeah, that's according to J.J. Watt after the game. You may have seen that quote.
Yeah, what was it? He considers himself the Red Rocket, but they made him the Red BB gun today.
Yeah, that was. And Dalton didn't take kindly to that quote from J.J. Watt at all. But
that's one of the most comical feuds in recent history I can think about. You think you'd be fired up about your game, your team losing and your offense underperforming. Right. But instead, you gotta come back at J.J. Watt. I don't know. Maybe we're Wisconsin boys that have a little bit of extra support for Watt. But I found that whole thing hilarious and kind of embarrassing to Andy Dalton.
Oh, indeed. But, diving into the fantasy side of it, Dalton's averaged 278 yards passing on the season with at least 2 completions of 20-plus yards. On Monday, he didn't even reach that 200-yard threshold. Like you mentioned, didn't have a touchdown at all through an interception. He did pad his line with 30 yards on the ground, but, that did... That's not enough for any fantasy owner to be that pleased with this performance.
Yeah, very little consolation to those starting Andy Dalton there on Monday night.
And I don't know, all of his big targets were targeted a lot. Giovanni Bernard had 8 targets, AJ Green 7, Marvin Jones 9, Tyler Eifert 7. So, and not one of those guys actually had a decent game. They were very modest. AJ Green probably had the best result with 5 catches for 67 yards.
Yeah, but AJ Green did lose a fumble, which made things tough. tough on fantasy owners.
At the very end, you're right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the fantasy day wasn't the greatest for him. Marvin Jones, 4 catches, 44 yards. Again, you mentioned Eifert, only 3 catches for 26 yards. Eifert's not going to have a Gronk game every week. I still think he's a top five tight end rest of season, though.
Yep.
Moving to the running game, which was really, it was evident that that was lacking in Cincinnati's offense on Monday night. Bernard, just 8 carries for 36 yards. Jeremy Hill, only 7 carries for 15 yards. Jeremy Hill owners continue to be in agony over the underperformance so far this season, and Monday night certainly wasn't encouraging there.
Yeah, and this is kind of a little trend now going. In the Bengals' previous game against the Browns, they actually had a pretty horrible game on the ground as well. So it's not the most enticing, you know, situation at the moment when it comes to Cincinnati running backs.
Mm-hmm. So when it's all said and done, this was a night well spent at the Bradley Center for me. I got to see Marquette with a little squeak out an overtime victory over the IUPUI Jaguars there. So well worth it for the time there. Didn't get to catch much of the game there, but I'd say I made the right call.
Yeah, it was a very good decision on your part.
All right, well, let's move on from this red BB gun talk here and hit the meat and potatoes of our podcast. We're talking the waiver wire / fab preview for week 11. Before we get going here, want to run down the week 11 buys: Cleveland Browns, New Orleans Saints, New York Giants, and Pittsburgh Steelers. One thing that stands out to me with those buys, it's very quarterback heavy. Outside of the Browns, you got Drew Brees, Eli Manning, and Ben Roethlisberger, which of course we had that interesting Steelers situation last week, but these are quarterbacks that you're starting in pretty much all your formats there, so keep an eye on the quarterback part specifically. One last thing, all percentages that we state are percent owned. We took these early Tuesday morning, maybe early afternoon, so relatively recent, about to the time of recording. And finally, fab estimates are based on standard scoring, 12-team format with a $100 budget, and hopefully you save some of your money here, especially if you're in need of a quarterback. There's three quarterbacks we want to highlight today. First off, I just want to go over the guys we've already mentioned. If they're available, snatch them up first. Particularly Derek Carr, 81% Yahoo, 79% ESPN. You got to go ahead and own him even in an 18-team league, right?
Yeah, it doesn't even make sense why 20% of leagues he's unowned at the moment. He's reached 300 yards in three straight games, and he's already done it 5 times in 9 games. So that's QB1 material. He's thrown multiple TDs in 4 consecutive games in 7 of the last 8. Mm-hmm. So you just can't leave him out there. You got to go in there and Absolutely. Get him up to nearly 100% ownership.
Yep. No, I was really high on Sam Bradford to start the year. But the one thing keeping me from the basement in all those leagues is going out and getting Derek Carr early. And he's been proving to help me win some games and keep me back into playoff contention. So yeah, good for him.
Yeah, definitely likewise.
A couple other backups we talked about in weeks past: Blaine Gabbert of the 49ers, Matt Hasselbeck of the Colts. No need to really go into too much more detail. They're going to be starting, so they need to be owned probably in deeper two quarterback leagues, but not feeling super confident about the playing time there. And one other quarterback that we've talked a lot about is Johnny Manziel of the Cleveland Browns. It was announced today that he will be the starter for the rest of the regular season here. Manziel had a pretty good game on Sunday, was accurate passing, and demonstrated some intangibles there, which is, of course, good to see from the young quarterback there. Can you see Manziel being a force anywhere outside of two quarterback leagues?
Yeah, that, I would say he's limited to that. Also, I mean, you know, he has to probably be picked up in 16-team leagues just because he's had 13 and 15 in terms of standard scoring points in the last 2 weeks. So, you know, that's nothing to sniff at. Like, it will help out your squad if you're in need of quarterback help.
Yeah, for sure. Manziel last week against the Steelers, 33 of 45 for a career-high 372 yards passing, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, got sacked 6 times, so that's not the greatest, but also led the team in rushing with 3 carries for 17 yards. So wow. way to go, Browns running backs here. I saw a tweet last night. I forget who it was. Someone said Jameis Winston has 4 rushing touchdowns on the season, and that is more than the Browns and Jaguars combined.
That's ridiculous.
That is a pretty crazy stat. I love those hilarious stats like that. Browns just can't seem to get that rushing attack going despite a stellar offensive line.
Yeah, and something to note too, like Manziel will get that extra yardage on the ground too. He's averaging 7.3 yards per carry. last week in his first career start, right? He had 31 yards rushing. So you're going to get those few extra points in the ground, too, which will help you.
Yeah. I mean, 30, 40 extra yards, 3-4 points, that's essentially like throwing another passing touchdown for another quarterback. Right. So if you think of it in that light, it's very beneficial to have a quarterback who is thrifty and nimble on his feet there. But let's go ahead and talk about a few of the other quarterbacks we got to look at this week. I'm going to mix the order up a little bit and start out with Brock Osweiler out in Denver. He's pretty much universally available. The Peyton Manning show finally ended a little bit on Sunday due to injury, it seems, and Brock Osweiler came in to relieve him, 14 of 24, 146 yards, one touchdown, one interception, also added three carries for 18 yards. Looks like he's going to start Sunday at Chicago, so pretty favorable matchup. He'll be starting over Peyton Manning. Eric, do you think the weapons that Brock Osweiler has at hand in that Denver offense make him a viable pickup, especially this week against a pretty favorable matchup, you would think?
Well, let's talk about Emmanuel Sanders first. So he dealt with an ankle injury last week. He was very questionable coming into the weekend. He was able to convince the team that he could play, but then when he went on the field, he actually was targeted four times but wasn't able to actually catch any of those. And then he left the game with a finger injury and was tested for concussion. Mm-hmm. He passed that concussion test, so he's good to go on that front, but he's still going to be monitored very heavily to see how his practice participation pans out. And that will leave Osweiler with really only one viable receiving option, probably. I mean, he'll have that safety net in Owen Daniels and Vernon Davis, but Demaryius Thomas is the guy we're talking about there. And I guess Ronnie Hillman a bit, too. But when I'm looking at this matchup, Chicago's actually played better against the pass in recent weeks. They've only allowed 222 yards per game in the past three, two touchdowns and two interceptions during that span, which is only good for 10.7 points in standard formats.
Okay.
So, I mean, there is a trend going against the Denver offense right now, and it's specifically Osweiler.
Yeah, but see, that's one of those things where my gut instinct tells me Chicago doesn't have a great pass defense, but when you actually look at the numbers there, it's better than expected. So not necessarily a lock. I wouldn't necessarily go too far out of your way to lock Osweiler into daily lineups there.
I mean, it is much better if, you know, Denver does get all their weapons back intact. Osweiler will, you know, he should fare better on a weekly basis.
I mean, if you're sitting Breeze and Eli Manning this week in a two-quarterback league, I think there's a spot for Osweiler in lineups there. But the situation's needs to be pretty unique, I think, for you to go out of your way.
Yeah.
One last thing before we move on from Osweiler, Emmanuel Sanders, quote, here's the Gary Kubiak quote. he's going to, quote, have a normal week.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see how that goes. Again, probably still worth monitoring as the practice participation and everything from the week becomes available here. What about rest of season? Do you think there's a legitimate chance that he can take this job from Peyton Manning for the remainder of the regular season here, or is that kind of up for grabs still?
Man, like, it's going to be a maintenance program, I think, with Manning, so it's going to be a week-to-week thing rather than anything you can really depend on. So, yeah, I would say Osweiler's going to have it for the foreseeable future because of the, you know, what is it, torn plantar fascia for Manning, right?
Yeah, that's never good. I mean, it's not like Manning's the most mobile in the pocket anyway, and this is only going to make things much more difficult.
So I haven't really looked ahead at the Broncos matchups for rest of the season, but, I mean, what kind of fab bid would you put in based on that? Maybe not more so on the, you know, upcoming matchup against the Bears, but, you know, rest of season.
Well, first off, the matchups are a little bit up and down. Week 12, New England at home. Week 13 at San Diego. Week 14, they've got Oakland at home, which is a bottom three pass defense, potentially helping you out in the playoffs there.
Yeah.
Week 15, they go to Pittsburgh. Week 16, they have Cincinnati at home. Week 17, they have San Diego at home. So
yeah, there's a potential for some shootouts in there if you know, all of his weapons are intact.
Yeah, for sure. As far as Fab goes, I think if you need him, you can rationalize $8 to $12, but probably not a whole lot more than that. You shouldn't need more than that to really get him. If someone wants to go ahead and spend a fifth of their budget on someone who will probably be a backup quarterback on most fantasy in any 12-team league, really, then you could let them do that without feeling too bad about it, right?
And you would also think the Denver's defense is actually going to set them up for, you know, better situations than the Denver offense just had against KC, you know?
Yeah, right on.
So
it was a kind of a fluke. I don't want to say a fluke, but the Denver defense did give up more points than they're accustomed to.
Yeah, Charcandrick West had an incredible game against that D, surprisingly.
Yeah, former RotoWire fantasy waiver wire recommendation, Charcandrick West. Right. We knew it was coming, I guess. But let's move on to other quarterbacks to consider. Of course, TJ Yates. We briefly touched on him in our discussion of the Monday night football game. There's a chance he could start Sunday against the Jets, and that is if Brian Hoyer remains in concussion protocol. Yates would almost be like Osweiler in a sense where the weapons could be limited to one big receiver. Of course, we're talking about DeAndre Hopkins. They already hooked up together. That sounded wrong. But they connected for a touchdown pass in the Monday night football game. But TJ Yates, probably limited to two quarterback leagues, right?
Yeah, he's facing the Jets this week, which means Darrell Revis is probably going to be shadowing DeAndre Hopkins all day, and that's probably going to hinder his options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whittle it down to next to nothing.
Mm-hmm. I'd almost stay away from Hopkins in daily formats just for that reason. You don't want one of your top price players to, you know, have someone like Revis shadowing him. So, yes, very limited this week. And I'd imagine they'll go right back to Hoyer afterwards once he's cleared of that concussion protocol.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Now, what about Mark Sanchez here? He's universally available as well. Sam Bradford is dealing with both shoulder, no surprise there, and a concussion. He did not practice Tuesday. He'll probably have to go through protocol. And even if he clears concussion protocol, there's still the shoulder. That's a bit of a question here. In relief of Mark Sanchez on Sunday against the Dolphins, he was 14 for 23 for 156 yards, no touchdowns, and a pick. Another one that you got to be limited to a pretty deep two-quarterback league, right? Or do you think the system can actually help Sanchez become productive if he does, in fact, get the start?
Yeah, so he's played in parts of 10 games as an Eagle. In those games, he's averaged 257 yards passing, had 14 touchdowns versus 12 interceptions. So you don't really like that ratio, but it's more the yardage that you're, banking on. Mm-hmm. 64% completion percentage. So, you know, Chip Kelly's offense has, you know, made him decent quarterback, I guess, in this league. He's facing Tampa Bay this week, who has a 10th best pass defense, 233 yards per game. Mm-hmm. But they've also given up multiple touchdowns in 6 of 9 games. So, I don't know. There's some decent trends going for him if he does get the start.
Yeah, especially if you think the Philadelphia weapons are starting to get a little bit more healthy. Nelson Aguilar should be back in action. Of course, Jordan Matthews, he's been off and on this year, but I just remember last season when Nick Foles went down for the Eagles, I went ahead and picked up Sanchez, and there wasn't a whole lot much of a drop-off there. I mean, not like Nick Foles was having the greatest season ever, but I was able to maintain essentially with Sanchez.
Yeah, and you definitely profited, too, in daily formats because his price is so low for a while.
Yeah, I mean, even looking ahead to potentially this week's matchups, I'm trying to take a look at who the Eagles have this week.
They're facing Tampa Bay.
Oh, yeah, Tampa Bay, that's right, you said. So, I mean, you could get a pretty cheap start to your lineup if you went with Sanchez and Jordan Matthews, perhaps that pairing, and then that would give you plenty of room to go ahead and get Todd Gurley and Rob Gronkowski in your lineups, and I think you'd be set up good. I think I might use that as a foundation in a few of my lineups this week just to give it a try. I mean, you take the matchup and the cheap guy. I did that with Kirk Cousins last week, and it worked out. So I guess we'll see if we can replicate that this year. But as far as fab goes for Sanchez, a buck or two if you need him. I wouldn't really go too aggressive here.
Yeah, and maybe if you're a Bradford owner, would you maybe go a few dollars more just to make sure you get that guy you've been, you know, following all season?
Yeah,
the quarterback in the system you've been following all season.
Exactly. If I'm a Bradford owner and Derek Carr and Blake Bortles and are both snatched up as they should be, and Manziel isn't out there, I'd almost put Osweiler over Sanchez.
Among the guys we've talked about?
Yeah, among the guys that we've talked about today. I mean, there's going to be other quarterbacks available in your league. He's kind of
like
near the bottom.
Fitzpatrick would probably be out there for you, but we're also watching to see how he recovers from his thumb surgery too this week.
That is correct. So Fitzpatrick, yeah, maybe another chance, but you know, it would be taking a chance on someone that's a little bit banged up.
Yep.
Let's move on over to the running backs. We got to stress one more time, one last time probably for these two backs. We always like to go over guys we already mentioned first, but Jeremy Langford is still available in 25% of Yahoo and 14% of ESPN leagues. That's 75% and 86% ownership. He's got to be snatched up everywhere, you know, regardless of Forte's health and how much they use him moving forward. He's got to still have a role.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll get the bulk of the carries, bulk of the touches out of the backfield until, Matt Forte is completely healthy from his MCL sprain. So yeah, I definitely agree with you. There's no reason for him to be unowned in this many leagues. Mm-hmm. He's posted 22 and 29 standard points in back-to-back weeks. That's just incredible production. That's RB1, like, all the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the young back out of Michigan State, right?
Yep,
so we're very familiar with him up in Big Ten country. Another running back we've already touched on, but it's worth re-mentioning because there's about a 1 in 5 chance he's available in your league. That is the starting running back in an Aaron Rodgers-led offense. Of course, I'm talking about James Starks from the Green Bay Packers. He's only owned in 80% of Yahoo and 86% of ESPN leagues, so he needs to be owned just about everywhere moving forward. No, he didn't have the greatest game last week statistically, but with the opportunities there and Aaron Rodgers at the helm, there's going to be potential for big games, especially if this Eddie Lacy injury lingers a few more weeks.
Yeah, we're going to have to watch that groin injury very closely. Starks will be facing Minnesota this week. They've allowed 4.2 yards per carry to running backs, 41 catches to them, and 4 touchdowns in 9 games. So it's a middle-of-the-road matchup, but something that you should at least try to take advantage of.
I would still call him about an RB2 or at least a flex in most formats, 10 teams or greater.
Yeah, indeed.
All right, well, let's head over to New England. I know we touched on some of these guys a little bit before, but we got to talk about just rehash James White and Brandon Bolden a little bit from the Patriots. Now, it appears LeGarrette Blount is the main guy in that. He did play only 38 of 73 snaps on Sunday, but he was efficient, 19 carries for 66 yards and a touchdown. Is it worth looking at White or Bolden anymore, or can they be considered? Are they rosterable, or can we consider even dropping them at this point? Because the numbers seem to be pretty limited.
Yeah, I would say you may want to hold on to James White at least for one more week, because he got 28 out of 73 snaps, mm-hmm. only 10 behind LeGarrette Blount. So I would say you can still hold on to him, but he only had one carry for 5 yards and caught his only target for 6 yards. So that's basically negligible, mm-hmm. usage in that offense. You'd want to see him getting at least a few targets. And if he doesn't actually get that the next week or two, then at that point, you probably want to jettison mm-hmm. him for somebody else, some other option.
Yeah. So two guys worth rehashing, but possibly on the chopping block very soon here. And I think LeGarrette Blount's your man.
Yeah. And I would say Bolden, like, you can probably get rid of him with, the hopes that you don't mess it up, I guess.
Yeah, of course, knowing Belichick, though, this is all going to shuffle like a deck of cards for next week. And the snap count will, essentially put into one of those lottery machines with all the ping pong balls. And he'll decide, okay, White's going to get 38 snaps this week. We'll give Blount 25, You never really know. That's how it seems like it goes with Belichick, at least. But so there is potential, but I wouldn't bank on it too much. Now, what about Carlos Williams of Buffalo? Now, Shady McCoy still, he's healthy. He's involved in the offense. But then you have Carlos Williams, who's managed a touchdown in, almost every game this year?
Yeah, he's had a TD in every game, in 6 of 7 contests this season. So, yeah, I should have wrote that a different way. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. He's had 7 touchdowns in 6 games this season. So he's had a touchdown per game. At least a touchdown per game.
Yeah, because he did miss a couple weeks, I believe, with concussion. But he's essentially no longer dependent on LeSean McCoy's health or status. You can consider starting him in a deeper format, almost as a flex or an RB2, just because he seems to get the goal line carries. And he's got a nose for the end zone, and that's tough to argue with in the National Football League.
Do you think he can maintain his usage from this past Thursday? 7 carries for 24 yards, only caught his one target for 24 yards in a TD. Do you think he can keep that up?
I mean, that's a double-digit fantasy point day if you're considering PPR. It'll be tough to expect that on a week-to-week basis, but we never know with LeSean McCoy. So, there's a chance. It's not the safest play, but he's someone that should be able to get you 4 to 8 points almost guaranteed in a week with a little bit higher ceiling than that.
Yeah, so I think the 8 touches can be maintained. It's just you're going to be variable on the touchdowns and, mm-hmm. the amount of yardage he can actually put up.
Yeah, I mean, the pattern has been going strong so far. Yeah. But something like this can only continue for so long.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe you want to watch it. But again, I mean, there's a lot worse running backs that you could stick in your lineup when you're in a bye week pinch or something. Fortunately, bye weeks are narrowing down, and we should have to do this less and less as the playoffs approach.
Yeah, I don't know if you mentioned it. At least 30% unowned in ESPN and Yahoo formats. So if he's out there, you probably have to take a stab at him in 12 team deep, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, what about Sean Drone of the 49ers? He was the lead guy in Week 9. Of course, the 49ers had a bye week, Week 10. 16 carries for 58 yards. I know we mentioned Kendall Gaskins 2 weeks ago. He had 7 carries. I mean, the Saints are cycling, or not the Saints, the 49ers are cycling through backs quite a bit. Is any of them really worth owning?
I mean, considering Gaskins' usage and, sorry, considering Drone's usage, yeah, like, if he's getting 16 carries, there's a decent bet that he'll have a, you know, at least a 5-point game in terms of fantasy. So he's not really a pass catcher, but as long as he's the man on the ground, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the tough part for me, though, is this matchup coming up against Seattle here. Yeah, they're just outside of the top 10 in run defense here, allowing slightly over 100 yards per game on the ground to opposing running, or to opposing anyone, I guess. I'm looking at the overall team there. So the matchup is a little bit tough, and especially if San Francisco gets behind early on, there might not be as many carries to go around. So I'm very hesitant this week, but he's worth looking at.
Yeah, and he just that defense just contained Chris Johnson to, I believe, 65 yards on 25 carries or something like that. That thereabouts, 25 carries for 63 yards, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Sean Drone is definitely a massive step below that, you know, level of running back.
Exactly. So maybe a couple dollars on the fab budget, but not a whole lot really to go around there.
Right.
All right. Let's look at the Oakland backfield. Now we've got Latavius Murray, who was a little bit iffy heading in the last week, but he still carried the ball 12 times. Now they reduced his load a little bit and gave some of the secondary carries to a whole committee, basically. Are any of those guys worth owning?
Yeah, so outside of Latavius, the only player who received touches, well, there were two guys, Jamiz Olawale, mm-hmm. who is the backup fullback, and he received 5 carries for 24 yards, 3 receptions on his 3 targets for 35 yards, and the starting fullback, Marcel Reese, was the only other player to have a touch. 1 catch for no yards on his 2 targets.
So going down the depth chart, you can pretty much forget about guys like Taiwan Jones and Roy Helu, right?
I mean, according to Coach Jack Del Rio, Taiwan Jones and Roy Helu were not in the game plan. And they didn't really intimate whether or not that was due to, you know, Taiwan Jones' fumble issues the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you're scrounging for running backs, Jamiz Olawale is the guy who got the most recent touches.
Yeah, so if you do need a Latavius Murray handcuff for whatever reason, I don't know if Murray's high enough on the list where handcuffing him is a super high priority, but I guess Olawale is your guy to own out of that group if you have to. But, I mean, we've had a rough group of running backs this week. We've had some good weeks for backs this week. There's just not a whole lot to find on the waiver wire.
Yeah, and that's probably a good thing, meaning there weren't a lot of big injuries to, you know, stud running backs this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much the case there. Well, fantasy football just got a whole lot more interesting. Week 11, DraftKings will be hosting yet another Millionaire Maker event with $1 million going to first place. Go to DraftKings.com now and enter promo code ROTOWIRE to play free with your deposit on DraftKings. That's promo code ROTOWIRE for free entry now with your first deposit at DraftKings.com. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Once again, I'm back here. I'm Jake Litarski here with Eric Katuri. We're running down the waiver wire preview for this upcoming week. We've already hit the quarterbacks and running backs. Time to move on to wide receivers here, which there's a few intriguing options that we want to take a look at here. Real quick, we've already mentioned guys like Stevie Johnson, who's owned in 70% of Yahoo, 62% of ESPN leagues. Michael Floyd, 61% of Yahoo, 61% of ESPN leagues. And Stephon Diggs, 84% of Yahoo, 80% of ESPN leagues. If those guys are on your waiver wire, it's not likely, but you got to go ahead and get them first before get him first before anyone we're going to talk about today. But the first people that we're going to discuss here might be a little bit better of an option here. But as far as those three guys, they got to be owned almost universally, right?
Yeah, and I definitely love the Stevie Johnson pickup for any owners out there that are in need of wideouts because they are facing the Chiefs' secondary, which has been, you know, exceedingly yielding to wide receivers this year. They've given up at least one touchdown to wide receivers in all but one game this season. So, yeah, it's in an offense that is, you know, been high-powered most of the year under the direction of Phillip Rivers. You know, he's the guy to target.
Yep, and I also really like Michael Floyd, of course. His availability is a little bit more open if you need to fill a spot there. He does have a tougher matchup going. The Cardinals host the Bengals, but, I mean, Carson Palmer looks like he loves to hit him with that deep ball, and that's a threat on any given week.
Yeah, he scored in four straight weeks, too. So, you know, that trend is, you know, it could come to an end because it is such a, you know, in-your-face trend, but who knows.
Yeah, so he's definitely got the hot streak going on his side here. But the top receivers for the week that you're going to want to target stem from the injury to Julian Edelman, who had surgery and will be out for the remainder of the regular season. So we head to New England and we look at guys like Danny Amendola and Brandon LaFell. Amendola owned in only 33% of Yahoo and 22% of ESPN leagues. LaFell's quite a bit higher up there, 79% Yahoo, 73% ESPN. Pats are going to take on the Bills on Monday Night Football this week here. Got to look towards both those guys. I think without Julian Edelman involved, Gronk is obviously going to be the number one receiver in that offense. But it comes to these two that are next in line in what is supposedly the best offense in the league here. So as little as 10-team formats, both Amendola and LaFell need to be owned across the board.
Yeah, not only Julian Edelman's Jones fracture, but Deion Lewis, who suffered a torn ACL the previous week, with two of their top pass catchers going down. After Gronkowski, it's a little cloudy, and LaFell and Amendola definitely can factor into that. And they have actually a decent matchup going into this week, too. They're facing the Bills. The Bills have allowed multiple touchdowns to wide receivers in 5 of 9 games this season. So that is trending in the right direction. Which one would you lean toward, I guess, out of these two?
I would prefer LaFell. Maybe Amendola could bring it a little bit closer if it's a PPR format.
Yeah.
But I really like LaFell. Even when Edelman was around, since he came back, he's had 6 or more targets in every single week. So that's good. And LaFell, to me, seems like more of a deep threat, more towards those sideline catches. So if Brady's kind of going for one of those running the 2-minute drill, he's going to go to LaFell a lot. So I like LaFell's potential more because he'll be able to get into the end zone.
Right.
At the same time, when Edelman went out, it was Amendola who seemingly took over more of his role. He played 51 snaps in that game, which is his third most on the season, and he got 11 targets, which is his most on the season by two. Ended up being very efficient, hauling in 10 of those for a total of 79 yards. So if you're in a PPR league and you need to replace Edelman exactly, you might want to look towards Amendola. But in standard formats, I'm leaning towards LaFell. I think the ownership percentages have it right here with regards to who's owned and who's not.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Yeah, if you're in a PPR format, Amendola is the guy. But the touchdown potential isn't really there with him, where like it is with LaFell.
Yep. Now, this is one of the best offenses with the who seems to be the leader in the MVP race so far this year, Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I would say it's tough to argue against that. Now, the top two receiver in the best offense in the league, that should be worth about 30-40% of your fab budget, right? Or am I going a little overboard there suggesting a $40 bid on Amendola this week?
Yeah, I mean, if you have saved up your money to this point, that means you haven't really needed to spend it. So at this point in the season, why not try to bolster your bench, spend a decent share of it and get one of the, best receivers or one of the top receivers in one of the best offenses in the league.
Yeah, I'm looking to shell out for all of that. Unfortunately, most of my leagues, I'm down to about $30-$35 left.
Right.
So I might consider spending it all. Fortunately, I picked up Amendola. I picked up LaFell in one of my 12-teamers about a week after he got activated from the IR. So I was early to the punch there, and that's going to pay off for me, I think, now, especially because in a standard format, I think LaFell is definitely a wide receiver 3, possibly creeping up into wide receiver 2 territory.
Yeah, and I think the fact that Amendola actually had 10 receptions in this game is kind of evident that they were maybe testing him out as like the third down option, whereas, the first half of the season it was Deion Lewis and then probably going to be Edelman if Edelman was able to stay healthy. So I mean that's also a good thing. That's trending in his direction, especially if Gronkowski's triple team was against the Giants.
Yeah, I was just gonna say maybe the Bills and Rex Ryan will figure out a way to just put 2 or 3 bodies on Gronk at all times, because that's really the only way you're gonna stop him. Yeah. And that leaves guys LaFell on the sidelines, Amendola in the slot in single coverage, which yep. It's only better for these guys. So I'm expecting big time rest of season. I'd put them both almost in at the back end, but almost in my top 25 rest of season if you had to just draft for these last few weeks, because these guys are going to cash in a few big games, especially if the Patriots are in close games.
Yeah, we're talking about basically a guaranteed starter at the position for the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm. And that make with it what you will, what you want to do with your fab budget for that. But I think a third of it or even more is perfectly reasonable here. Mm-hmm. So those are the top two receiver targets for the week. Let's run down the line here and hit a couple other potential targets. I'm looking at Tennessee, guys like Doriel Green-Beckham, Dexter McCluster, who might have running back eligibility in a lot of leagues, McCluster, so that could help.
And ESPN formats, he does.
He does? Yeah, all right. Yeah. I believe it's the case in Yahoo formats, too. Okay. So maybe he was meant to be up a little bit higher. But we'll talk about him now with his teammate, Doriel Green-Beckham. Now, Green-Beckham, he's a rookie, and he hasn't seen a whole lot of action up to this point. There's not a whole lot to really prove that he is going to turn things around and all of a sudden become a major part of the offense. You're really mostly banking on upside here, right?
Yeah. So Tennessee actually lost Justin Hunter for the season due to a fractured right ankle. Mm-hmm. And the other situation we're watching at wideout in Tennessee is Kendall Wright. He was limited in practice on Monday, but because it's a short week for the Titans, they're playing on Thursday against the Jaguars. He's probably hard-pressed to actually play, but there is a chance that he could. Mm-hmm. At that point, whether he plays or not, McCluster would probably be the number one or two, you know, option in the passing game, Green Beckham would be right behind him. Mm-hmm. I definitely like McCluster a heck of a lot more. Their ownership rates are about the same, so I would be targeting McCluster out of these out of this duo. You two?
Yeah, I would say so. Because of the running back eligibility, if you're really having a hard time filling an RB2 for a week, I think against Jacksonville on the short week, we might be okay here. But I am intrigued. I'm very intrigued by Doriel Green-Beckham. I got him as one of my dollar players at auction early in the season just to see what he would develop into. And he's been just kind of buried on the depth chart so far, so we haven't really seen a lot of him. Week 9 against the Saints, he caught 5 passes, was targeted 10 times, ended up collecting 77 yards, had 2 catches over 20 yards. But then week 10, he kind of returned to obscurity, only playing 29 snaps against the Panthers, and was catchless on 2 targets here. So it's really hard to determine what type of Green Beckham we're going to see. Yep. I think if he plays over 40 snaps, though, there's a good chance he sees the 6 to 8 target range and, maybe find the end zone for the first time since week 3.
Yeah, so in Yahoo leagues, I just checked out McCluster's availability. He's only a running back, not a wide receiver, so you don't have as much flexibility when it comes to your roster. McCluster is really valuable to me in a PPR format. So over the last 5 games, he's averaged 5.4 points in standard. But when it comes to PPR, you take into effect like his pass catching potential, he's averaged 10.3 points, which is definitely in the flex range in a lot of formats.
Yeah, so the Titans are going to use him to help move the chains a whole lot, but not necessarily give him a ton of looks in the red zone is what that says.
And he has reached end zone twice in the last 5, so it's a toss-up whether it'll get in there, but it's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, as opposed to Green Beckham, who scored actually in back-to-back weeks 2 and 3, but since then he has just 3 combined red zone targets over the next 6 games. So not a whole lot looking there, but maybe Mariota kind of starts to look his way with the lack of other options there. One other guy I think we've touched on before but is worth revisiting a little bit, Devin Funchess of Carolina. He was a big-time sleeper early in the year but ended up getting dropped in most formats as guys like Ted Ginn took over in that offense, Corey, a.k.a. Philly Brown, and, of course, Greg Olsen, a big part of that Carolina offense. But Funchess is stepping up his usage a little bit in recent weeks here. Do you think he could be a second-half, well, not even a second-half, a final third breakout type of player?
I think it's still going to be kind of tough because I think he's been, let's see here, he's had more than 4 targets 1 time this season. That was 6 in week 5. Since then, or other than that, he's been to max of 4, and a lot of times two or one. So I'm not really liking the target count, but in the last 2 weeks, he's had 3 for 71 and 1 touchdown against Green Bay, 2 catches for 41 yards against Tennessee. So you kind of like how he's trending. He's had his two best fantasy weeks, you know, the last two.
He caught a deep ball against the Packers, so that did help him out a little bit. Now, the thing that worries me with Funchess is over the last 5 weeks, he has yet to surpass 22 snaps in a game when he had 26 or more in the first 4 weeks of the season. So you think it would be flip-flop. You'd think it'd be the other way around, where Funchess's snap count would grow as the season goes on. But on the other hand, it seems to be shrinking, which is why I might be backing off a little bit. I'm still looking. I own Cam Newton in a lot of places. He slipped in many of my drafts because of people panicking about Kelvin Benjamin. I still took him, and that's been working out okay for me. But I've been searching all year for that receiver to really pair up with Cam Newton. I just don't know if it's Funchess. We could see better towards the end of the year, but that's, I don't know, that could be wishful thinking on my part.
Yeah, it's definitely just Greg Olsen in this offense. You can't really rely upon, you know, Philly Brown or Ted Ginn on a weekly basis.
Yeah, Ted Ginn's shown some stone hands a couple times this year. I wouldn't be too faithful in that there. Now, Funchess owned in just 23% of Yahoo and 11% of ESPN leagues, so there's a good chance that he is available. I wonder about the disparity, but I think Funchess was ranked a little bit high early in the year in drafts, and if people are just kind of, you know, letting their leagues go because they're out of the playoffs, then maybe that's why they're forgetting about him, the fact that they're still rostering him. Yeah. So I'd say Funchess is one of those guys that if you do pick him up, you monitor him over the next couple weeks, but if he doesn't get 20 snaps, he's immediately back on the chopping block when it comes to roster moves there.
Yeah.
The Panthers have the Redskins on Sunday.
Yeah, I was just going to say the Redskins give up nearly 15 yards per reception. So maybe they have a propensity to give up big plays, and we've seen Funchess do that a handful of times so far.
Yeah, so maybe a dollar or two on the waiver wire. I wouldn't say – I think you could probably get away with him with $0 in a lot of formats, especially if you're in a 12-team or shorter.
Yeah, indeed.
All right, well, let's move on to tight ends here. Real quick, we've already mentioned Vernon Davis, of course, with the move to Denver from San Francisco. He's owned in 63% of Yahoo and 48% of ESPN leagues, so there's quite a bit of availability there. Does the switch to Brock Osweiler maybe hurt his value, though, or based on how Peyton Manning has struggled earlier in the year, could having a fresh face in there actually help Vernon Davis as he starts to slowly get more and more acclimated with the game plan and offensive scheme?
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that Osweiler will probably be able to get him the ball in situations in which he can, you know, succeed, you know, helps him a little bit. But I don't know exactly how much you can expect him to be targeted in this offense with Osweiler under center. Maybe the fact that he's a young quarterback and, you know, he'll be used more as a safety valve more than anything will help out his cause. But I don't know if I want to rely upon that.
Someone who I'd almost argue is a little bit less risky and has lower ownership is Richard Rodgers from the Packers. Now, he's owned in just 45% of ESPN leagues, and he has 3 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks. We're going to touch on some other Packers a little bit later there, but, I mean, I think Richard Rodgers has proven, I mean, he's not going to be a ton of yards, but in standard formats that are 12 teams or greater, he's at least worth a roster spot, right?
Yeah, and the fact that he's becoming a favorite of, you know, Aaron Rodgers in the offense definitely helps Richard Rodgers, you know, the rest of the way here. So, yeah, I definitely agree with you there. What do you think of Justin Perillo, though, his little breakout here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit worried about that consistently happening on a week-to-week basis. One quick point I wanted to make about Rodgers real quick before we move on to Perillo is in the last 3 weeks, he's had 3 red zone targets and, like I mentioned, 3 touchdowns, caught them all. So if there's anything going his way, it's at least Rodgers trusts him down there, and we know that it sometimes takes a little while for Rodgers to build up that trust with his receivers. Now, you mentioned Justin Perillo. He's available just about everywhere there, but do you think he's ownable all of a sudden, or are we writing this off as kind of a one-week type of
performance? One-week wonder, yeah. I would lean toward it being that until I see, you know, decent sample size, but if you're in a deeper format and you really need something at tight end, I mean, why not go out there?
Go out on a limb.
And
hey, remember, like, we thought Gary Barnes wasn't going to be any good either, and look what happened there, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's always a chance.
And the fact that, you know, the Packers receivers weren't getting open, but Perillo was, I think helps his cause. And maybe something that they see in tape this week will make them – go back to the well and see if it's not dry.
Yeah, let's real quickly revisit the Packers' target distribution last week. Davante Adams had a whopping 21 targets. I didn't really see that coming, but I think that's very indicative of what we have moving forward. Randall Cobb, 10 targets. You can expect double digits from him each week. James Stark, 7 targets. Newcomer Jared Aberderis, 7 targets as well. He caught 4 passes for 57 yards, so maybe he's a real deep flyer at wide receiver, but he also kind of emerged from that game a little bit banged up, so we'll keep an eye on him. He at least appears to be ahead of guys like Jeff Janis on the depth chart there. James Jones did not catch a pass in that game. And then Justin Perillo actually had 6 targets compared to Richard Rodgers' 5 and had 26 more receiving yards and about a 5 yards per catch better average there. So,
how many times did Rodgers throw again? Because it was way too many for my liking as a Packer fan.
I believe it was a franchise record. He threw 61 times.
Yeah, 61. So, you know, those will be scaled back when they have at least an attempt to be, you know, more balanced on offense. But the breakdown seems correct the rest of the way. You know, Devontae getting, you know, upwards of a third of the targets and trickling down from there.
Yeah, I can very much see that happening, especially as he's gets healthier and healthier every week and Rodgers becomes more and more comfortable in Davante Adams' sophomore campaign. What about Baltimore Ravens tight ends, as long as we're on the tight end topic here? We got Crockett Gilmore, we got Max Williams. Now, this is a pass-catching group that's been decimated by injuries this year, from Steve Smith to Rashad Perriman, who went on the injured reserve this week, so they're not going to get Perriman services this year. Crockett Gilmore, I think, is the more favorable option by a little bit, owned in 13% of Yahoo and 11% of ESPN formats. I think that's because the Ravens recently had a bye, so nobody was too aggressive on him. But you liking Crockett Gilmore's prospects the rest of the season? I could see him as a just squeaking into the top 25 of tight ends and being a tight end 2 in 12-team formats there. I mean, both of them hauled in all 4 of their targets and a touchdown week 10 against the Jaguars here. So heading into week 11 against the Rams, tougher matchup, but is there something to like here?
I like the fact that he's had at least 4 targets in all but one of his appearances this year. He's averaging nearly 5 targets per game. He's got 4 touchdowns so far. I mean, he seems to take advantage of whenever he's targeted in the red zone. He has 5 red zone targets and 4 touchdowns to date. So, yeah, I would lean toward him over Max Williams. Max Williams would be more of a spec ad and maybe somebody you would think about in dynasty leagues if he isn't already owned. But I don't think in, you know, standard or even like 14-team leagues you want to consider him.
I mean, if you're in a deeper dynasty league where you take 10 keepers from year to year, for example, Max Williams might be worth kind of at the bottom of your list as a $1 keeper. If you're in a keeper league like the one I play in, where you only get 2 keepers and you pay the same price that they were at auction, I don't think the speculation isn't enough there to give him $1 keeper status here. So you got to really depend. There's a lot of different ways to play Dynasty, and there are some formats where you would consider him because just a rookie this year, taking a year to get acclimated with the league. But I really do like Crockett Gilmore. 4 or more targets in pretty much every game he's played except for 1 this season. Getting a decent amount of snaps as well. There were a few weeks where Crockett Gilmore had over 60 snaps, so he's starting to build some trust. Maybe get some more targets again, just 15 targets over the last 3 weeks. So that's at least a little bit consistent. And he also has 2 catches of 20-plus yards over the last 3 weeks. So if the Ravens find themselves having to pass, I think Gilmore will be involved and he's worth owning.
Yeah, indeed. So, yeah, when it comes to Max Williams, he's only had 28 snaps the last 2 weeks too. So that usage is – I mean, he's not going to have 4 catches on 25 targets again probably this season.
All right, well, that concludes our tight end discussion outside of maybe throwing out $5 to $10 for Gilmore, I think. Let's move on to kickers and defenses here. We're starting to get to the point of the year where weather is a factor, so of course you want to target those dome kickers. I don't have any kickers offhand except got to commend Cairo Santos on his 20-point week last week, one of the bottom-priced kickers in daily formats, and really paying that off for fantasy owners, 20 points. Our very own Clay Link has got to be just disgusted with me because I beat him this week by 3 points, and he was the second highest scorer in the league. He lost to me, who happened to pick up Cairo Santos for a cool 21 points off the waiver wire. So that's a tough one to take here, and I'm going to enjoy that. But Cairo Santos has a ton of availability, and yeah, I mean, I can think of a lot worse kickers to own at this point in the year.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Especially kicking in Mile High.
I mean, we're not going to recommend any kickers for the time being. Once you know, some weather concerns are a little more definitive in the coming weeks and, you know, through the end of December, we'll start recommending guys or not recommending guys because, you know, of impending snow, for example.
Yeah.
But yeah, what do you think of, you know, certain defenses that are probably, you know, readily available right now?
Well, my pick for the week that I really liked the most was the Atlanta Falcons defense. They seem to have been taking a lot of heat lately, got dropped in a lot of formats. They're actually available in 26% of Yahoo and 42% of ESPN formats. Now, the reason for this is one thing I've learned from streaming defenses is you don't always look at the opposing offense as a whole or the opposing team. You have to look at the opposing quarterback. And, of course, the Atlanta defense hosts Indianapolis this week, who will be led by Matt Hasselbeck, a quarterback. And I got to question a little bit how much Hasselbeck has left in the tank and if he can run, even with some of the wide receiving weapons he has, if he can run a high-powered offense. So I actually really like Atlanta this week as a streaming option. If you've been streaming, they've been not bad as a defense for the majority of the year, so you might even be able to get a couple weeks out of them. So they're my pick this week. Do you got a pick that you want to share, Eric?
Yeah, I was, leaning toward the Miami defense. And give me a second to look into something, and I'll bring it up.
Well, Miami defense, they've been pretty much revitalized since Dan Campbell took over as head coach. They were a defense that was checking in the top five season-long rankings on a lot of our customizable draft stuff. And they were a defense that I actually thought with the addition of Sue would turn out well. So I actually didn't use my last overall pick on a defense this year in one league, and a few rounds before that ended up with the Dolphins. But I ended up dropping them later in the league. And however, it is time for me to consider re-adding them in places where they're available.
Yeah, indeed. So we're kind of expecting Tony Romo to actually return. From everything we've seen in practice and the video, the little video that's come out of practice this week, or the past few weeks, Romo seems to be getting up to speed, and we kind of expect him to be playing and be his normal self. But there's always the chance that because he hasn't played in upwards of 10 weeks, that there might be some rust there. Exactly. And the Cowboys offensive line has actually given up 7 sacks the last 2 weeks. Of course, that's with Matt Castle under center, not Tony Romo.
You'd think that's a little bit uncharacteristic, but at the same time, some of that's got to be on the quarterback, not getting rid of the ball or making his reads fast enough, whereas opposed to Romo, who has plenty of experience in that offense, really getting it done.
So the Miami recommendation is more so, does Romo actually play this week or not? If he doesn't play, I would say pick them up because Matt Castle would be under center again, but we're not expecting that to happen. So it's just something to keep in mind, and maybe if you need to make a decision at the wire at noon or 1 Eastern on Sunday, that could be something you look at.
Yeah. Now, I just want to point out that Tampa Bay is actually a top 10 defense in the league, giving up 334.2 yards per game, but they held a Romo-less Cowboys to 6 points last week. So, just not getting a whole lot done on offense, even though they've got Dez Bryant back and, you know, missing some of their backfield and just really not living up to potential there. So there you have it, a couple D's to take a look at this week, possibly helping you out with streaming and or daily options. Well, thank you for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Again, use the promo code RotoWire when you deposit for a free contest entry today. Also, check out RotoWire.com free for 10 days by going to rotowire.com/POD. Once again, I'm Jake Litarski. If you're out there on Twitter, I'm at Jakeski52.
Yeah, and over here, it's Eric Kateri, and you can find me on Twitter at ETCat30.
The RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast will return Wednesday.
Kill the love of my life.
Casey!
If I don't go back to what I was doing.
This Friday.
Our line of work is quite brutal and quite ruthless.
How far would you go for love?
You steal a truck, bring it to me. Then you make your money.
Is it dangerous?
Of course it's dangerous!
Nicholas Holt, Felicity Jones, with Ben Kingsley and Anthony Hopkins.
All this trouble, all this pain, for love.
Collide, in theaters Friday. Rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.